Welcome to Nerd Nerd Nerdy here, as every Monday at Radio.Dominican.edu, 9 p.m. to 10 p.m., where we bring you everything you need to know about this week's nerd culture. I'm here today with a guest, actually. Can you present yourself, dear guest?
Hi, I'm Glennis Morrison. I'm a senior here. I am taking the graphic design program, and welcome. Thank you for having me here.
No, thank you for coming and enjoying the show with us today. As usual, we have our three segments of the show. We have the Quibbler, where we bring you all the news you need to know. We have the new, the old, and the ugly of Pixar movies, as you may know for the music that we're listening to, that is the theme for Monsters, Inc. And we have, finally, The Hitchhiker's Guide to our favorite author of our dear guest, The Hitchhiker's Guide to Mercedes Lackey and her works. So I hope you enjoyed today's show, and we will get right along with it. The first section, the Quibbler, we have a lot of news for you today. I will say to you that I'm DJ Titania, in case I didn't say it. I think I didn't. I was enjoying the smooth jazz.
No, the intro to Monsters, Inc. is quite wonderful, and this is a good transition to our subject that we're going to talk about next, right?
Yeah, we're going to talk about in the second segment of the show, of course. The first piece of news that we have for you today is that Guardians of the Galaxy 2 already has a date for begin shooting. They will begin shooting February 2016, and it will shoot in the same studios that Captain America Civil War and Ant-Man shot, that it's the Pinewood Atlanta Studios. So that's good news for those of us who are waiting for the sequel. The first movie was so good. I talked about it in a show before this, and yeah, it was so good. What did you think about it, Glynis?
I really enjoyed it. I actually got to sing all the songs when they were going on, and my friends were looking at me like, wait, you know these? I'm like, yes, this is my moment.
Of course. Oh my God, like Hooked on a Feeling. Who hasn't, like, if you haven't watched the video for Hooked on a Feeling by this guy, you know who I'm talking about.
Yeah, the name's completely going off. I have been going in my head.
The Hoff.
Oh, The Hoff, yes.
The Hoff. Oh my God, that video is so good. It's like so funny. Please go and watch it. Okay, the second piece of news we have is that Microsoft is going to stop the production of the Kinect version 2 for Windows. Actually, they will not stop the support for them on Windows 8 and 8.1, but they will... They want the Kinect for Xbox One to be the main product for Windows. They do have like an adapter, and they are encouraging the developers to create content for this product rather than the Kinect version 2. They say that is exactly the same and it works exactly the same. I really wouldn't know. I mean, I've only used the Kinect with the Xbox 360. Do you have any experience with that, Aquinas?
From the Xbox One perspective, it's really interesting to see how people have used it. I personally not have used it, but my boyfriend does have an Xbox One. Mm. And he says sometimes he has to deal with things that are a little bit annoying, like the camera will randomly zoom in on like certain areas of him.
Oh my God, certain areas.
Hey, it's the butt that the camera keeps zooming on. I'm like, okay.
Oh my God.
It's very interesting. And then when he goes and does Twitch streams, sometimes the camera or the audio stuff will go out. But other than that, he's able to fix it real quick.
Oh, okay. So we'll see how that works for Windows. I was actually looking forward to it because the only game that I want from the Xbox is Just Dance, because I actually really enjoy it for working out. And I am a PC gamer, so... Do not judge me. I forbid you.
I'm not judging you.
Yes, I see your face. You're judging me.
No, I'm just enjoying your happiness.
Oh my God. I am sorry to say that I do enjoy Just Dance. I mean, it's not a perfect game. It's not a good game even, but it's good.
Everyone has their personal taste. I'm more of a first person shooter. I enjoy like the MMOs and the RPGs, but nothing is wrong with Just Dance. It's so much fun.
Nothing is wrong with Just Dance. No, the sad thing is that if you only play Just Dance and you consider yourself a gamer, that's the sad thing. I do play other things, of course. But okay, moving right along, we have a comic book crossover. We have some information about comic books this week because WonderCon was happening this weekend. And actually what we have for you today is that Star Trek and Green Lantern will have a crossover. Blah, blah. It will be a 6-issue comic book crossover, and it will be written by Mike Johnson that wrote Star Trek and Supergirl, and will be drawn by Angel Hernandez, that drew Infinite Crisis, Fight for the Multiverse, and Arrow. Okay, so I'm very excited for this. I'm not a Star Trek fan, and I'm not a diehard fan of Green Lantern, but I think it's very rich for different franchises to move together and to work together, because I think that that's what the public wants, ultimately. I mean, the fandom growing so fast, and the Star Trek fandom is absolutely amazing and so vast. And I think that the Green Lantern corpse goes right along with Star Trek, and that they could merge very easily. And actually, it seems that that's what they did. We do have access, if you want to check it out, you do have access to several covers that have been released. And in the first one, that was drawn by Rodriguez, we can see General Chang that appeared in Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, with the possession of a yellow power ring that, as many of us may know, is the ring that harvests fear. So that seems pretty unnerving. Siniestro right beside him. I don't know.
Oh, God, no. Just imagining Sinestro and those two together and just the amount of damage they could do, because Sinestro already has his agenda that he wants to get done, and then Chang has his own. And I'm just wondering how they're going to make... I think it's going to be a good job of meshing it if they can do the writing right.
Yeah.
And there's so much richness to both universes. I'm wondering how they're going to mesh the mythoses, as you can say.
Yeah, that would be pretty amazing to see. If they get it right, it will be like an artwork piece, like now you see like Batman and like the original movie Batman and The Killing Joke by Alan Moore, something like that,
or even the animated series by Batman that was just beautiful. Oh my gosh! If they can get the writing like that, then they'll probably hit the nail on the head.
Yes, of course, I think so too. Okay, next we have George R. R. Martin and HBO developing a new TV series called Captain Cosmos. And actually, although he's not writing a new episode for this new season, as he did not write a new episode an episode for season 5 of Game of Thrones, he is working on developing this entire new show for HBO. And it supposedly is not a time-consuming process, like a time-consuming project. And it is a series that takes place in 1949 and revolves around a daring young science fiction author who spends his time crafting stories no one else would attempt to write. Tan, tan, tan. I don't know. I just get a glimpse that... I just get a feeling that it's an autobiographical story, and I just think that he's too full of himself right now. Okay, Martin, just stop, you know?
I don't know, Matt. I'm just wondering what that's going to be really like, because you have the mentality of the beginning of the Red Scare in the 49 to about like 54, And I wonder how he's going to deal with that, as well as all of the issues dealing with the time period, along with the sci-fi universe, because the sci-fi genre really kicked off in like the late 40s and early 50s.
Well, actually, it's because of the Red Scare that it kicked off.
True, that's because of all the aliens.
Exactly,
oh no.
Exactly. So people were turning to genre writing rather than realism, and yeah, because they felt that they weren't safe, they felt that they weren't at home, and they needed some kind of fantasy to put these fears into, so they turned to science fiction. And that's why the golden era of science fiction is in the 40s and the 50s. And that's where the great authors of science fiction come around, like Asimov, Ray Bradbury, C. Clarke. Exactly.
Oh, God, no, I love Ray Bradbury. I loved Fahrenheit 451.
Yeah.
So
it's
good.
It's a good novel. I personally like Clarke. Yeah. She's so good. Moving right along. We must know. We know, everybody knows, that this Sunday we have a very important event in our community, which is the beginning of the new season of Game of Thrones. I have a cold, guys. I'm sorry. Another time it would be like so amazing, but today's not. We would have a chorus. I would bring, I don't know, all the school here to sing, but today I have a terrible voice and I excuse myself for the coughing. So, April 12th, the day has come where 10 weeks of our lives revolve around Game of Thrones and Game of Thrones only again.
Oh gosh, I can't wait for it. I hope we can see more of what happens to Sansa and the Starks and really see what the Khaleesi does in addition to a few other things.
Yes, I'm actually looking forward to it and at the same time dreading it.
I really hope my favorite characters don't die. Please, Sansa, please don't die. Arya, don't die. Daenerys, baby, don't die. Beautiful, strong female characters.
Oh my god, you're going to say to me, really are going to say that you like Daenerys? Please stop, guys. Guys, Daenerys is not a good character. Please stop. Okay, I'm going to get mad right now. So we're going to move right along to the next section, next piece of news of the show. That is that Bryan Singer reveals the length of Road Cut of X-Men Days of Future Cut. X-Men Days of Future Past. Apparently, Anna Paquin had chipped in with a few scenes of Rogue for Days of Future Past that did not make it to the final cut, and they're releasing the scenes as the Rogue cut of the film. I like that name so much.
Oh yeah, and then we also have our warm fond feelings for the character Rogue, so like, ooh.
I do especially. I mean, if you know me personally, you know that I do.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's 17 minutes of extra footage. Oh my god, my pronunciation today is awful, guys. I'm so sorry. And it's not confirmed yet when it's going to be released, but we can expect it before year's end. Next, we have some Deadpool movie leaked footage that shows the stage production, and you must see it to believe it, guys. The movie is on full rage right now, and I really like it. I mean, I got so disappointed with the game. I mean, Deadpool keeps on disappointing me. The comics are so good, and everything else is... that word that we're all thinking. But, I mean, not good. Not good at all. What do you think?
The Deadpool game, I just kind of sat there like, wait, what? And I was disappointed. There were some things I did enjoy, like the interaction with Deadpool and Death was quite humorous. But I really hope for this new movie that they really do try to get the quintessential Deadpool from the comics and just get him.
Not like in X-Men.
We shall not speak of that scene.
Why did I mention that? I totally regret it. Like, I did it. It came out of my mouth. the thought was produced in my head and I totally regret it. Oh my God, I'm so sorry, guys. I'm sorry for bringing that up. But now they killed him. Did you hear about that? They killed him.
What?
They killed Deadpool. I totally saw that somewhere. I saw that somewhere. I swear. And it, like, it hit me right in the gut. It was like, yeah, Wolverine's dead. What? It's like saying like the wolf's dead. No. You don't do that. You just don't. Mm-hmm. Do not.
I was like, give me the evidence, please. I like my cold, hard facts before you even before I believe any of that. But please, no.
Exactly. Moving to some more happy news. Play-Doh could come to the big screen. So we have Lego the movie, the games, of course. Now we could have Play-Doh the movie, the games. Play-Doh the games, like the video games. That would not be fun. I can totally picture some scenarios where that would not be fun for little kids.
No, I'm just imagining some adult gamers going in and like, oh, I could have a lot of fun with this. And just like, no.
No, please. No, please don't. Restrain yourself. Well, this is the latest trend in Hollywood. And according to Deadline, 20th Century Fox made a deal with Hasbro for the live-action film. And supposedly, Paul Feig, that brought Bridesmaids and The Heat, is in talks to direct the film with Jason Micheleff that will write the script. And blah, blah, the movie will most possibly come after Feig's comedy Spy and the controversial Ghostbusters with the whole... female cast. What do you think about that?
Well, with the, you know, those are the code talkers, correct, from World War II?
Mm-hmm.
Actually, most of the people that did work on the code talking were women, and the only person that was hailed from that point was a single man who directed an entire team of women, and they're making it an all-male cast. Is like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Seriously,
I mean,
no.
Whatever. The only thing I have to say about it. And, well, that's about it. I mean, Play-Doh the movie in cinemas, 2018, 17, something like that, guys.
It hurts my soul.
Look forward to it. It hurts my soul. Exactly. Okay. Next, I have some fun news. Blizzard gives students scholarships for Heroes of the Storm, for playing Heroes of the Storm. And the name that they're giving this program is...
Heroes of the Dorm.
Yes, I love puns. Puns fill my life with joy.
Puns are wonderful. Just... it's oh, yes.
Yes, they're wonderful. Well, that's all I have to say about that. They're giving, like, Blizzard, the perfect company, is giving out scholarships. Yes, because you play Bombas. So get onto it, guys. Go play Heroes of the Storm if you can get a beta, of course. And finally, for this segment, we have out this week, very quickly, just the lineup, Dark Souls 2 Scholar of the First Sin, the DLC, $60, or $50 for PC and $40 for PS3 and Xbox 360. Bloodsport TV, do not buy it. Please do not spend money on that game. Horrible. Just watch the trailer if you want it. If you've played Borderlands, you know what I mean. It's just disgusting. Xenoblade Chronicles is coming to the 3DS. It would be $40. Pretty nice. Star Drive 2, it's coming up for PC, and it's a 4X strategy game. If you like those kinds of games, you have a new one. And Affordable Space Adventures for the Wii U. And they actually kind of made me want to buy a Wii U. Because, I don't know, it seemed so fun. I just couldn't help myself. So it's kind of like a local cooperative game where you have a spaceship and you just ride the spaceship around. And it's so very funny. Okay, so now we're going on to a break. And I'm going to leave you with a song that's very close and dear to my heart and also has to do with the next topic that we're going to touch upon, that is the new, the old, and the ugly of Pixar movies. This is Nerd Nerd Nerdy with DJ Titania here with my guest Glynis, and we'll see you on the next segment. Bye bye. Welcome back to Nerd Nerd Nerdy, where you bring where we bring up your nerd side. This is DJ Titania here with my guest Glynis, and in this segment of the show, we're going to talk about the new, the old, and the ugly of Pixar movies. By the way, that song was More Than a Feeling by Boston. And it comes in play when we're talking about the new film by Pixar that is called Inside Out. It's actually going to come out this year. And if you haven't watched the trailer already, it's about the feelings and the emotions that we have inside our heads and how they run our mind. And they are personified in this in five little figures. There are joy, sadness, anger, disgust, and fear. And they, like the five, actually there are six primary emotions, I guess, in that psychology theory that I'm thinking about and that you're probably thinking about now. But they're just summarized in five. And they're personified in these little figures that have the control of this little girl's actions, and we get to see the life through this little girl's mind rather than watch a story of what happens outside. We watch the story of what happens inside her mind, inside her head. And we also get to see what happens to her memories and how she gets to process that. I thought that that was really clever. When I saw the poster, I was like, what the hell is this? Like, what is this? Like, this is too abstract. What is this exactly? But when I saw the trailer, I was completely enthralled. Like, it was so beautiful. Like, I think that for visual people, it would be even more beautiful. I'm a sound person, so I got caught up by the music, but it's really beautiful visually too. The only one I didn't like that much was Joy. I thought she stood out too much. I don't know what you think.
I think she could use a little bit of balancing. Probably in the trailer she came out to be so strong because it's literally her and sadness. And sadness is very subversive and very submissive to Joy, who is a very dominant feeling. And she's appearing so much because everyone loves the bright and cheerful, happy little thing. And she fits that role quite nicely. And it's interesting the color schemes they went with all these kind of characters. Disgust is green, anger is red, fear as this kind of light lavendery color. And then you have joy as this bright, bright yellow. And then sadness is the stereotypical blue.
Yeah, but I was kind of off that joy had blue hair.
That was interesting, but I think they did that to kind of balance her out because you don't want to have too much yellow on something or else it just becomes like this giant lemony character like Lemon Grab from Adventure Time. Mm. You have his head, it's just this huge yellow lemon.
Unacceptable.
Yes. 1,000 years in the dungeon.
Yes, exactly. Oh my god, Lemon Grab. Why did you mention Lemon Grab? Now I just like my mind flew away to Lemon Grab and his lemon kingdom and him eating his brother, for God's sakes.
I mentioned him because they did a really interesting thing with him, is that he's such a yellow character that they have these off-putting colors that are like black or of blue. And when you have the colors yellow and blue together, they simultaneously contrast because blue is kind of close to the color of purple. And yellow is such an intense... If you look at a pure shade of cadmium yellow, it is very intense. Mm. And to have that blue to kind of tone down the intensity of the yellow kind of helps.
Yes, I see what you mean. But at the same time, I get the feeling like, isn't that joy always comes with a little bit of sadness?
Ah, that's good what they'd be hinting to. That would be very clever, although...
Yeah. Also a little bit sad.
You can't enjoy some things without a little bit of something else in it.
Yeah. I loved anger. I'm the rage monster.
Anger was interesting. Just like, you turned pizza into horrible things, San Francisco.
You've officially ruined pizza, San Francisco. And I mean, yes, veggie pizza is ruining pizza, guys. Let's admit it once and for all. Pepperoni pizza is the only pizza that's really, like, it's the king of pizzas.
I must admit, I eat more gourmet pizzas that have, like, prosciutto and pancetta.
Oh, come on. Go away.
my mom's a foodie, so it's not my fault.
But going along these lines, I also wanted to mention Moana, the new Disney princess. It's not a Pixar movie by any means, but I just wanted to mention her because Disney princess is for the win. I mean, yes, I just love Disney princesses. What's wrong with that?
Nothing wrong with that. And she's actually going to have a very interesting story. This is kind of the first time we see kind of Disney moving out of the realm of more of traditional fairy tales. Like Anna and Elsa was the Hans Christian Andersen Snow Queen. And Moana is more of them venturing into world mythoses with like the Samoan mythology and how their princess is going to be on a spiritual journey, which is something a little bit different than the normal princesses.
Yes, be prepared for the hype.
Choo-choo!
Oh my god, choo-choo. Okay, now moving on to the old. And here we have, of course, a lot of movies to mention because, I mean, we grew up with Disney, with Pixar. And we actually saw Pixar coming to be a company as it is today with Toy Story. And it wouldn't be what it is today, the 3D movie industry, if it wouldn't be for Pixar and Toy Story. And Toy Story has a very close place to my heart. In 1995, I was 4 years old, and I remember going to the cinema to watch Toy Story. And it was, who wouldn't love to, for their toys to come to life? What child?
I would have honestly loved that because I had so many dinosaurs. Oh, heck yes. I would love to have had a Rex.
Oh my God. You would actually want dinosaurs to come to life.
Well, you know, Rex wasn't all that bloodthirsty and violent, and neither were all the toys. So it's like, oh my gosh, I get to command an army of dinosaurs.
But there were all these other movies of toys coming to life.
Oh, yeah. The cupboard made in the 80s. There's some other ones that I cannot name off the top of my head.
Little Army one.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
I just can't remember.
And those were pretty violent. I mean, they weren't like fiery, like little scaredy cat Rex or any of that. Going for the kill. I mean...
Well, though those were made in the 80s, and they wanted to prove a point with those ones. And
oh, yes,
be
of course.
Moral.
Allegories and stuff. Let's not put physical violence. Let's teach the kids a lesson. Blah, blah. But we also have A Bug's Life. That is actually the second Pixar movie ever made in 1998. And I do remember also The Bug's Life, but it's your favorite movie, so you should talk about it.
I remember going to the theater with me and my brother watching this, and we were just looking at this little ant dude like, what? And we watched his journey going from like this little inventor trying to prove himself to the colony, and then him kind of screwing things up and being cast out and being with the so-called freaks. And me and my brother were very much in love with this movie because... of the fact that we and him weren't really the normal kids of the yard.
I totally understand that, and I could totally relate to that point. But it's just that, I don't know, it didn't stick with me. The more... I wouldn't say fantastic, because A Bug's Life is totally fantastic in its way, but Toy Story or A Monster's Inc. or Finding Nemo, I don't know why they seem more outrageous for me. I don't know why, really.
It's probably because there's such different writings between these ones, and you have Toy Story with such a heartfelt thing, and then Monsters, Inc. is more dramatic in its nature, and then Finding Nemo is very much a parent's quest, and each one of them has a different theme. While Bug's Life is slowly trying to work its way there, wasn't quite there for some people. For me, it was enough, but I can see why it wasn't lackluster compared to these other giants that are listed.
Yeah. I still quote Finding Nemo.
Just keep swimming, just keep swimming.
Yes, exactly. And I shall name him Squishy, and he shall be mine. And he shall be my Squishy. That's very important to me. It's like a life-changing quote.
Mm-hmm.
I also quote The Incredibles.
Oh, gosh.
A lot.
Oh, I am so excited for The Incredibles 2. As soon as I heard the news and the same director was going to do it, Brad Bird, I'm like, the gods have answered my prayers.
The gods.
Finally, finally the animation gods.
Well, the animation gods answered my prayers with A Princess and the Frog, and then I saw it, and it was like, it was absolute. I mean, that's what, yes, what you're thinking, guys. I cannot say it live, but you know what I'm thinking and what you're thinking, that word. Yes, the only thing salvageable about that movie was one or two songs. Fasulier's song was good. And Tiana's song was good. Mama Audie's song was good too. Those three songs. That's the only thing I salvaged about that movie. Everything else was pretty dumb.
There are some things that were dumb. I did kind of enjoy it because I liked that the princess was so different. And the prince, you could really see his character growth. A lot of the things I do agree the story could have been a bit stronger. But I think it was much more enjoyable for me because, I don't know.
You have a black princess, and for the whole of the movie, you make her a frog.
True. There is that downfall of that. However, I think it's interesting that they completely took away, like, the shades of these people and, like, made them work together in such a vulnerable fashion. Like, you either work together or you don't get anywhere.
That's true.
It's like the desert island situation. You have two people who absolutely don't want to get along. You make them get along and they see things in a completely different fashion.
Well, yeah. It's kind of like the Rapunzel kind of thing again. Or, well, it was before. But they were probably in production at the same time. At some point. Because these movies take so much, like the 3D movies take so much longer to produce and to fabricate that. They must have been in production at the same time.
Oh, yeah. And from what I remember from doing some readings about this, the characters were actually were thought about more like towards the late 90s, like 1999. They were thinking about doing this. But because of the rise of 3D and no one really wanted to see 2D movies anymore, they kind of scrapped it for a much later time. And I think it's very sad that they've kind of killed off the beast of 2D because there's such a magic with it that 3D sometimes can't quite capture.
I totally agree. And a lot of people lost their jobs for something that people still want to see. And it's something that I cry for every time I think about it because, I mean, 2D animation is so magical, as you said. So magical and so amazing. And it's like such a wonder. With today, with 3D, you can make everything happen. It's not the same as having someone put their life and soul into a pen or a pencil and make a drawing happen. I mean, they do the same for the 3D movies, but it's different at the same time. You do get what I mean.
Oh, yeah.
Because the 3D the 3D models are reusable, and that's why you get movies such as Frozen or movies such as Tangled that are kind of the same thing. You see the faces of the characters. They're kind of pre-rendered things. They all look kind of the same. And it's not that they're not distinguishable one from another. They have kind of tweaks and perks here and there. But they're the same model, just...
It's the Glenn Keane model. If you look at Ariel and look at some of the movies he was a part of, then you can see that, like, the sameness of the faces. And they just stick with it because it's such a popular model. Though there are some 3D movies, I will say, are quite excellently done with, like... have you seen The Book of Life?
I haven't seen it. I actually didn't see it because a friend of mine said it was an absolute catastrophe.
I enjoyed it. If you want, I can give you the DVD and you can borrow it and then decide for yourself if you enjoyed it or not.
I could actually do that. It's just that I was preparing myself for the trip to come here, and I didn't have the time to actually go. So it was kind of a mixture of both. I was going to go and see it, but I didn't have the time. And then I heard reviews about it. So, you know, kind of, I didn't want to. What I heard is that it insulted, in a way, Mexican culture. And that's something that I kind of put up with. Like, insulting other people's culture, I don't really get well with that, you know? I'm just not that kind of person. So it really hit me when somebody said, oh, you know, it doesn't like put this culture in a pedestal. It's kind of making fun of it. And I was like, oh my God, then it's not the kind of movie that I want to see. That's what I thought when the review got back to me. It's not that I didn't want to see it for other reasons.
Oh, no, no. I completely understand that. No worries.
No, I know. Okay, and we're kind of ending this segment right now. But before we end the segment, I'm going to say that The Ugly, because some of you may wonder why we haven't mentioned The Ugly, because The Ugly is, like, really simple to say. The Ugly of Pixar movies are Planes and Cars 3, right?
Why? Just why?
Why did that happen? Why? But it did. It's kind of sad, but it did. So, okay, this is radio.dominica.edu, Nerd Nerd Nerdy, with DJ Titania and my guest, Glynis. This was the segment on the new, the old, and the ugly of Pixar movies. And now, the next segment we're going to talk about The Hitchhiker's Guide to Mercedes Lackey and her works, where Glynis is going to talk about all of her favorite books. We'll leave you with a song, and we'll see you. Well, actually, you'll hear us in the next segment. Back to Nerd Nerd Nerdy, where we talk about all your nerd culture things that you want to know. This is DJ Titania here with my guest Glynis, and in this segment of the show we're going to talk about The Hitchhiker's Guide to Mercedes Lackey and her works. This song that you were listening to right now, it was Lana Del Rey's version for the Maleficent movie. That's how you pronounce it. Maleficent movie of Once Upon a Dream. I was when I was doing some research about Sleeping Beauty, because it's actually my favorite Disney movie, I found out that Once Upon a Dream is the only song that is not Tchaikovsky in the movie.
Wow, that's interesting.
Isn't it interesting? Yeah. I thought that Lana Del Rey is not such a bad version. I like it. I mean, not to be on my iPhone, but I like it. Okay, moving right along to the topic that we're going to talk about right now. Tell me a little bit, Glynis, who is Mercedes Lackey?
Mercedes Lackey is an American writer. She does a lot in the fantasy genre. She has several book series out. To name a few, you have the Mage War series, the Elemento series, and you have the Writer's series that has to deal with magic and all of that stuff. And if you are a big fan of fantasy, she is a really good person to look into. Or if you want to look at specific things, like if you're a mage person, you love looking at elemental stuff, the Elemental series, highly recommended. The Mage series, I recommend reading the first two books. The third book is just no. It was just painful to read, and I could tell she only wrote it because the publishers were just poking her, like, kill right now.
Oh, I hope that you could poke George R.R. Martin like that. There's too many layers.
One does not poke George R.R. Martin and not get away without their favorite character dying.
Yeah, you could say that George R.R. Martin pokes you. That was an awful joke.
No.
Oh, come on, laugh with me. It's so awful. I'm laughing at my own joke. Come on. I know you want to laugh. I saw it in your face.
He's the great troll lord. Be careful of his Twitter account, because if you ask him questions, he'll just be like, oh, you like this character? I would be ashamed if something were to happen to them.
So Mercedes Lackey's not like that to her fans.
No. She's very much of, like, teases them, like, oh, here's just, like, the first chapters of the books that I'm going to be writing, and if you like it, good. If not, well, I'll just be finishing this series and doing another series or continuing on with your favorite series. And she's very kind to her fans.
She's very prolific for what you've said.
Mm-hmm. I think she's got, like, 10 book series to her name. I know she's got a couple new ones that she's venturing more into, like, explicit romantic-y areas. I've read a few of them. I enjoyed them. But it was very different for her to write, like, sex scenes for the first time in her actual books. I'm like, oh, hello there.
It's like reading the Sleeping Beauty series of Anne Rice. It's, like, so weird. Like, mm-hmm. Okay, this is not... This is porn. This is not erotica. This is porn.
Well, hello there, porn. I did not expect you to be here.
Exactly. It's like Joey telling Rachel, like, you got porn. That's exactly what it is. So you told us a little bit already, but tell us more about what's exactly that she writes about.
She does a lot of like magic people, like magic creatures, griffins, magic horses that I don't remember quite exactly what the names were, but the series that I most remember the horses are from is the Arrow series, and where these horses are magical in that they never tire. They require very little food and water, and they're magically bound to their riders. And if they die, then the rider gets a new horse. But if the rider dies, the horse just will never get a new rider.
Oh, so sad.
Because that horse is forever bonded to that person, and it's a huge devastation to have the rider die on the horse.
Mm-hmm. I can see that. Like, oh, you left me so sad.
It's like when you have a person dying and their dog is still alive, the dog runs to the grave, and it's just like, please wake back up, come back home.
Exactly. What's your favorite book by her?
My favorite book would be The Black Griffin in the Mage War series. Probably the first thing that really got me into the fantasy series. I saw it when I was with my dad in the bookstore. I'm like, oh, this is interesting. Grab. Oh. And I just sat there, just consumed the book in like half a day. Like, what? I finished this? No.
It happens. You know what you made me remember with that? You know the sword and the stone?
Oh my gosh, yes.
Exactly. You know what I'm talking about. For those of you who don't, like when Arthur actually is like reaching for the sword, the music swells and the light just goes into yes. The light just goes over him and it's just so beautiful, like so exactly like
very
that happened when you open the book.
Yeah, it's the characters are so good, and you mostly actually, interestingly get it the perspective through three characters. Scandran Rakishay, he is a griffin, male griffin. Zehenel, she is a female griffin, and then you have only one human perspective, which is Amber Drake. And it's very interesting to see how everything is character-driven instead of plot-driven, and that really interested me in writing and actually doing something along that nature, as well as get me really into my creative side.
Oh, I see. So she inspired you to write.
Yes, she did. She very much did. And I have my own book series I hope to publish or even just illustrate in the future.
Oh, I see. So tell us a bit. So how did she inspire you? So what things did you take from her for your novel? And then tell us a little bit about your novel.
Well, what she inspired me was these griffins weren't just mindless, bloodthirsty creatures. They were actually intelligent, and they could tell right from wrong. And they're like, wait, I don't understand why you're having us do these things instead of having these people do it. Are we different in some way? And the interactions between the characters felt genuine and alive. When Amber Drake was counseling Scan, I'm going to use love as an example because this is just a really good way of how you see the characters really grow. And that Amber Drake was telling Scan, like, dude, you need to kind of tone back on the cockiness. That's not how you're going to get the girl you want. And, dude, just calm down on the testosterone. Be more aware of the feminine side. And when Zehenel came to Amber Drake about love, she was like, this guy's so amazing, and I don't want to be like a fangirl. And he's just like, he knows them very well. So he's like, I can see the ship. I want this ship to sail.
The ship sails itself.
Choo choo. But he was like, all right, so girl, what you need to do is act hard to get. Don't give him an inch in anything. And make sure he does not see you as something easy to obtain, because once he attains you, then you're just, he's like, oh, okay, off I go. And so as these characters interacted, these two fell in love, and more kind of drama happened around them. You have the Mage Wars really building, and things are really looking bleak and desolate, and they're trying to be so happy in such a horrible time, and unraveling some really dark secrets that are actually within their own mage camp that they couldn't believe was really actually happening.
You're talking about these things, and you make me think about so many influences in her work. How long has she been working?
As a writer?
Yeah.
Probably since the 80s. From what I could see, she's done books in the 80s, and she's still writing to this day. And I know she got, from what I can tell in her writing, she does a lot of looking at old Celtic mythology, looking at Arthurian legends and that kind of sense of like medieval lore and Renaissanceal lore.
Yes, I can see that. And when we talked about this before the show, you mentioned that she inspired you in the way she builds her worlds, and how she built her stories and how she intertwines them. So if you could tell us a bit about that.
Well, for her story, she has an archetypal character, the hero, but the hero isn't necessarily like the traditional hero. He's got flaws, he's not perfect, and he's working along this hero's path with other people like mentors and companions to really guide him to a better pace. And the world she builds, you can feel that they're real. She takes examples from real life situations. And when you world build, that's what you really kind of want to do. You want this world to feel like people can understand what's going on, instead of be like, oh, in planet blah, 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 where things are like this, and have your audience be completely confused. Like, I don't understand. Like, you say one thing, but then something else completely happens. And it's really hard to sometimes keep things cohesive, but she does it in such a way that it is stays cohesively in the within the narrative.
Yes, you also mentioned when we were talking this saga. This, I don't know if it's a trilogy or something like that, but where this mages, this elemental mages, and it was set in today time.
Oh, that's the Elemental series. There are some points where it's set up within the early 20th century, and it does continue on to our modern period. And these people control basically the four main elements: earth, fire, water, and air. And they all deal with making deals with these different spirits that are of these elements. And some of them take place within San Francisco, some in London, others in the English countryside. And I believe there's a couple that are... I believe in the Far East, if I'm correct. If not, I'm probably thinking of a few other books, but they're really interesting to see. They're very also much character driven than plot driven.
So those are for you who like the Avatar series. There you go. If you want a follow up and the little mangas are not enough for you, you can check out that series and that would be fine. You also mentioned that the artwork she works with her husband, it's lovely. I'm looking at the little piece that you brought here today, your favorite book, and actually the piece is beautiful.
Her and her husband actually do a lot of looking at real life birds and stuff and looking at people, and they've had their friends sit down and be sketched out by her husband. He works a lot primarily within charcoals and... mostly charcoal, but he does touch up on Encante, I do believe, and he has no problem flexing out into new mediums, but he prefers the charcoals as like his home base.
I understand. And this totally interests you because of your background, but you've mentioned that you have a novel that you're writing and you're an arts major, so I wanted you to talk us a little bit about this projects of yours and if you're going to have a showdown or something, because we all wanted to know.
I will actually be having a show. It's going to be April 23rd is the reception night when all my illustrations for my novel go up. But my novel is a quick summary. It is a fantasy story, and I take my twist of Beauty and the Beast, and it's called Maudite Bête Noire, Cursed Black Beast to be translated. And you have the two main characters, Jolie and Aiden. One is the beauty, the other one's the cursed prince, and they really have to work together to break this curse, but also kind of take on evil forces that are rebuilding themselves to try and take over their world and basically reshape the universe in some way.
Ah, that's pretty nice. So I really like that you involved not only your novel, but also you made pictures, you made the whole senior project that you had on your novel, and you said that you also involved music with this.
Mm-hmm. I actually have QR codes that will go with these pictures. You can scan and listen to these songs as you look at the pictures and be more immersed in this world.
That's actually so amazing. I love when you intertwine different kinds of art, different types of art, and you make them one. Because I think that's kind of the future of art, making, collaborating between each other. So that's all for today, folks. If you want to say anything else, Glynis, this is the time.
Definitely come to the senior show. It's going to be a lot of fun. And if you have questions about my book series, I'll be more than happy to answer them. I'll probably still be working on it to get it published with my writing guru. You'll probably meet him as well and my other writing group buddies as a part of the whole shindig. But thank you for listening to me.
No, thank you for being here. It was a pleasure having you in the show. This is for those of you who forgot about it, is Nerd Nerd Nerdy. This is DJ Titania, and you're listening to radio.dominican.edu. We're going to be here again next Monday at 9 p.m. Stay tuned for that, and have a good night, have a good week, have a good everything. See you next Monday.
You got a friend in me. nice warm bed. You just remember what your old past said. Boy, you got a friend in me. Yeah, you got a friend in me. You got a friend in me. You got a friend in me. You got trouble, and I got them too. There isn't anything I wouldn't do for you. We stick together, see it through, 'cause you got a friend in me. You got a friend in me. Some other folks might be a little bit smarter than I am, big and stronger too, maybe, but none of them will ever love you the way I do. It's me and you, boy. And as the years go by, our friendship will never die. You're gonna see it's our destiny. You got a friend in me. You got a friend in me. You got a friend in me.